We have four guests scheduled today, live guests.
Yeah.
This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM channel 371.
Start the 8 o'clock hour. The good news is we're going live to Greensboro right now to visit with Kelly Gramlich. The bad news is apparently, oh my goodness, look at the pinkies up. The coffee's being drunk. Pack, the bad news is this. Apparently, we're going to be out of money after we're done here because she apparently is staying in some sort of presidential suite in a Greensboro hotel. I mean, what in the world is going on? That looks like, is that like Renaissance? What do we got there, Pack?
Wow. Look at this. Look at my view. I mean, I can entertain.
You know. Let me ask you something. It really doesn't count until you have a fireplace. If you got a fireplace, then it matters.
Yeah. You know, I might get the fireplace going another evening, gentlemen. And Wes, I'm so glad you noticed my pinky. That was the whole point of that. Yeah. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I want to say this. Let me just outline.
Living large.
Yeah, living large. We're going to be, Packer and I are going to be doing this show on iPhones here pretty soon.
Let me tell you something. I've got good news and bad news for you, Kelly. The good news is you have the nicest room in a hotel. The bad news is we're cutting back here at ESPN, and I'm going to be your roommate.
Well, Pat, you know, there's this lovely couch for you.
Hey, I'm used to that living.
table. Perfect for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time a woman's told me, hey, you're sleeping on the couch and you're going to like it.
There you go.
Well, not the first time I've ever heard that.
All right, day one, I'm going to say no surprises. You're going to go with me on that?
Yeah, no surprises, except for the fact that Pitt had Duke. That was pretty surprising. Duke was down early, I mean, down big early in the first half, and Shai Day Wilson, the ACC Freshman of the Year, just went off, and she hit a crazy mid-range jumper and then hit this, like, step-back three to basically seal the game for Duke. And Duke's on the bubble. This is a team that's had such a weird season. They had a great non-conference. They beat Iowa, who's the Big Ten regular season champion, and they beat Notre Dame, but then they've had some other struggles. But that win was big. If they win today, if they can beat Miami, I think that they have a very good chance to make the NCAA tournament and kind of sneak in. But to me, they have to win today. And today, guys, I know I'm skipping ahead, but we have two incredibly bubblicious games. Florida State and BC, yeah. They're playing in the 8-9. Both of them need to win. Only one can win. This is not soccer. And then Miami and Duke, both of them need to win. Only one can win. So it's going to be very interesting today.
You know, we were talking to Nina King yesterday, and you got the sense of the three games to start things off in Greensboro. The must-win situation was on Duke. Mm-hmm. And, Kelly, you've been down this road before. The pressure when you know, hey, we understand. Not only is it the ACC tournament, but our postseason hopes ride on it. And, you know, they got punched right out of the get-go by Pitt. I thought that was a touch of class by Duke to figure out a way, hey, don't panic. Let's figure this thing out, and they won a tight game. I think that will help them. You know, you almost need a game a little bit where things don't go well, and you kind of grind and figure out a way to win, and it almost kind of puts you at ease for the next one. But, yeah, there's still pressure, like you said, on those two games today. Whoever wins is going to feel good about life. Whoever loses is going to look around and go, man, it's going to be a nervous time when the selection committee comes out.
Oh, yeah, they're going to be sweating it out. And even if Duke does win, I feel like they'll be sweating it out on Sunday. It's going to be – or Selection Sunday. It's going to be really interesting. But you're right. In that first game, Pitt had nothing to lose, and they came out playing like they had nothing to lose. Duke was playing like they had everything to lose. And then with this Miami game, I think Duke has depth, so that will – I think it's a positive that they played yesterday. If you're a team like Notre Dame or Georgia Tech or Syracuse who has zero depth, you probably want more rest. But because Duke does have depth, I think they're feeling good that they got to play yesterday and Miami's been resting, so it might help them, especially early in that game.
All right, Kelly, we talked about the BC Florida State situation. Mark and I both like Virginia Tech and kind of the way they've arrived in Greensboro. And I know Saturday was, you know, a terrific game, or Sunday was a terrific game and a tough loss to NC State at home. But still, your player of the year, you called it. Kittley won the player of the year award. I mean, all the things that kind of come in with Kenny Brooks here. So Virginia Tech and Clemson. I feel good about the Hokies, but are we looking at Georgia Tech and Wake Forest in a situation where Christina Mora played great yesterday, had the double-double, and Georgia Tech, quite frankly, has been a little bumpy going down the stretch here?
Yeah, okay, I'll start with Virginia Tech. I think they are the team from today, and, you know, maybe Georgia Tech, but I think they're the team from today that can make a run because they do have depth. You need depth in this tournament. If you're going to win four games in 4 days, Georgia Tech just doesn't have that kind of depth. So I'm keeping an eye on Virginia Tech. This is a team that finished tied for third, but because of tiebreakers has the 5 seed. And y'all watched that game, and I got to call it. I was so happy to call it because that was one of the best regular season games I think I've ever seen between Virginia Tech and State. It was epic. So the fact that we perhaps get that again, even though Virginia Tech's got to beat Clemson and they got to beat North Carolina. So, you know, it's a little bit of a tall task there. And then with Georgia Tech, it's such a bummer that they've had this type of February because they're most likely going to fall into the 7 or 8 or 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. If you're a 6 seed or better, you don't have to go through a 1 or a 2 to make the Sweet 16. And the 1s and the 2s in women's hoops are so good that it's just really difficult if you have to beat one of them to make a Sweet 16. But if Georgia Tech goes on a run, if they can find a way to go on a run, they can improve their NCAA seeding. I still think they're a team that you just don't want to play because they're so experienced. They're so tough. They get after it defensively. Lorella Kubai is an absolute matchup nightmare. So I still expect good things from Georgia Tech in Greensboro.
I want to fast forward the clock a little bit. Not that I'm looking ahead of a potential matchup, but I want to get your take on, we had this buildup on Sunday's games. Obviously, right, Virginia Tech, NC State was great. We all thought that Louisville, Notre Dame would also deliver. Kelly, in my lifetime, I don't know if I've ever seen two really good teams. I mean, we know Louisville is a national championship caliber team. We know Notre Dame has an incredible program that Muffet built, and Ivy's doing a great job. And again, they're a top 15 team at home. Kelly, it was 45-4. I don't think I have ever seen two really good teams, regardless of sport, have a match, a game, a series, whatever you want to call it, in which it was 45-4. I mean, seriously, what was going on there?
Well, adding on to that, Pac, it was at Notre Dame.
Right.
That's the other part of this. It was Notre Dame. They were honoring Skylar Diggins and all this stuff. So I'll say this. I had dinner with Coach last night, and we're still working through that. She's still struggling a bit with that loss. And the fact that Notre Dame and Louisville are on the same side of the bracket, Louisville's thinking, okay, cool, because they have dominated Notre Dame. And here's the thing. I think Louisville-Notre Dame, it's so interesting because Louisville-NC State has become the matchup, and I really hope we see them in the ACC Tournament Championship because that game will most likely be epic. But the rivalry with the most bad blood and the rivalry that I think could really pull a casual fan into this is Notre Dame-Louisville. Let's just be honest, guys. These two teams do not like each other at all. And when Louisville's up 30-3 and Jeff Walls is still on the sideline yelling, push it, push it, I think you understand what's going on there. So Louisville, they just want to send a message every time they play Notre Dame. It feels like they have that extra chip, that extra motivation, and they played incredibly well. And Louisville has depth. I think I'm bringing up depth a lot right now because it's so important in March. Louisville has depth, and Notre Dame doesn't. They play about 6 players, and they've had some injuries. And Louisville can play 8 or 9, and they can come at you from all different angles, and they can run you out of the gym. So Louisville's a team right now, guys, that you could argue, even though NC State looks really good, I would say Louisville is playing the best basketball of any ACC team heading into March.
You know what, though? I will just warn everybody. You know, we're all fans, right? I mean, you want to see the best games and you want to be entertained. We say it all the time. And the potential of an NC State-Louisville 1-2 for the second time this year, we'd love to see it. In fact, we'd love to see it a third time, you know, for maybe a national championship. However, I will say, I go back to softball last year. It was Florida State and Clemson in the regular season. We didn't see the game. We got to the tournament, and it was like, oh, man, this is going to be awesome. We're going to finally get the showdown, Florida State-Clemson. Wrong. Mm-hmm. Duke won it all, right? I mean, so anytime we all in the media start clamoring around about potential, maybe looking down the road, I always take a step back and go, we're going to be sitting there talking about NC State. We're talking about Louisville. Do not be a bit surprised. Don't be a bit surprised if we don't get that game, because that's what normally happens when you start talking this way.
No, you're right, Pac. And think about this. Notre Dame beat NC State in the regular season. North Carolina beat Louisville. And, of course, NC State beat Louisville. So this is not a situation where one team or two teams are completely above everyone else. These teams have shown they can lose. I think we'd see a little more intrigue if UNC was on Louisville's side of the bracket and Notre Dame was on NC State's side. But it's the flip. And Louisville's really played Notre Dame well. And NC State has played UNC well. So we'll see. It's very, very tough to beat a team three times in one season, which is what those teams are going to have to do. And who knows, we might see Virginia Tech, who's played NC State better than anyone. But well, you're right. Everyone's assuming we'll see NC State Louisville, but with six ranked teams in this league, you just don't know.
Right.
All right, that brings me to kind of the question here. The fact Virginia Tech has to do this on the Carolina State side of the bracket, Kelly, does that keep us from – we getting chalk here? Are we going to get 1-4 on Saturday?
We'll see. I wouldn't be shocked. You know, I think 1-4 would be great, because those have been the four best teams all year, with the exception of Virginia Tech, because we did have that three-way tie.
Right.
Now, Virginia Tech had to play the extra game. They do have a decent amount of depth, so I wouldn't worry too much about them. And Virginia Tech and UNC split in the regular season. UNC dominated Virginia Tech at home. Virginia Tech dominated UNC at home. So I think that Virginia Tech-UNC game, that game's going to be must-watch. 11 a.m., a little breakfast game on a Friday. Make sure you watch that game. And then Georgia Tech-Notre Dame at the bottom. That's going to be interesting. Those two played a really close game that went to overtime in Atlanta. And so Georgia Tech can definitely push Notre Dame. That's where I see the potential for upsets. We could see a Georgia Tech and a Virginia Tech in the semis instead of UNC or Notre Dame. So I'd keep an eye on that.
By the way, I had a fan that was at the game yesterday send a photo that the shoe blimp is back in Greensboro. How about that?
Oh, Pac, we're getting ready for you. So Josh, one of your esteemed producers, was at dinner with us last night. And I looked at him, I said, is Pac going to steal the blimp again? And he looked right at me. He goes, yes. It was, think about it. It was, this is happening. Get ready. So I'm excited for you, Pac. I know you've been dreaming of this moment now for 2 years, a 2 year break between blimp opportunities.
I've been practicing with a drone. So I feel like my skill level's never been better. Never been better.
Wow. Wow. In fact, that's a bold statement.
I hope that they actually open up the doors so there's a little wind, a little current, because it, you know, kind of bring me back to my golf days, playing little fades, little knockdown draws. Be kind of nice.
See, Pac, I think they would worry if they opened the doors, you would fly that thing out of the Coliseum and then fly it to lands it and put it in the basement. That's what they're afraid of.
Well, I don't know if there's enough room between the moon pod and the blimp in here. That might be tough, but I wouldn't mind taking it to Cameron Indoor for the next night.
Oh, now, stop. Just stop.
We got Duke Carolina. That'd be a sweet thing, wouldn't it? A little shoe blimp.
Yeah. Heck, I hear Coach K's retiring. That's going to be very exciting.
That's breaking news.
Well, as I said last night on the air with Dan Bonner, Kelly, I think they're going to go ahead and go on through with this. So, yeah, they've talked about it. So
I would assume. You know, all will be at Cameron. So do me a favor. Say hi to my favorite Blue Devil of all time. You know who it is. J.J. Redick, tell him Kelly says hello. He'll know who it's from. He knows who I am, obviously, so please just say hello for me.
From one shooter to another.
I mean, really? Is there any doubt?
More importantly, I'll tell you what I'll do, Kelly. When I see J.J. Redick, I will do that only if you make sure Muffet cleans up from eating all those peanuts and throwing the shells on the floor, because you guys need to clean your act up when we come rolling in there Friday morning.
I understand completely. I will have Coach on her best behavior.
Please.
We'll work today.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
It's good to know that the Kelly Gramlich car service not only works in Hartford, but it also works in Greensboro.
I'm impressed. Corner suite.
I mean, there was somebody was doing something for you. Is this a contract year for you, Kelly, by the way? Somebody trying to butter you up for the contract?
Wes, I can't speak on that at this time, but I do think that you will love that Muffet's husband, Matt, who's an avid golfer, and my husband, who you know is an avid golfer, they're getting out playing around on Saturday. While the ladies work, the men play golf.
As it should be. 80 degrees, perfect weather.
Let me say this. Nick has played more than Matt just based on the geographic location of the two gentlemen. So Nick's like plus 325, I'm hearing right now on the Drew Brooks book. So there we go.
I'll let you know, Wes. I know you'll be waiting for the results. So
absolutely.
I'll let you know.
All right. Thank you, Kelly. Be well. We'll see you tomorrow.
Guys.
All right. Don't forget Nothing But Net. Full coverage from Greensboro tonight. Once the last game is concluded, that Georgia Tech Wake Forest game, right here on ACC Network, you get full coverage of day two of the 2022 ACC Women's Basketball Tournament. Kelsey Riggs, who's been on a tour of the continental United States, coast to coast, will join KG with Coach McGraw and Chelsea Gray live from the Coliseum in Greensboro, right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Well, probably the one thing that I think of when I think of Coach K is the tremendous respect he had for what Duke Carolina was. And Duke Carolina is. Remember when he took this job, Duke Carolina was kind of a thing in the late 70s, but it became a real thing when Mike Krzyzewski and Dean Smith were coaching. The second thing I always think of with Coach K is that Coach K had a level of respect about the rivalry that it crossed over to somebody like my dad. When he won the ACC tournament, and all the radio networks did the ACC tournament back then, he was always gracious enough to come over and visit with my dad. Whether they had beaten Carolina in the championship game or beaten somebody else, and then when my dad passed away in March of 2018, Mike Krzyzewski wrote a lovely note to my mom about what my dad had meant to the rivalry of Duke Carolina.
I tell that story, and I told that we shot that back in October. I told that story then, and Robert Crawford from Winston-Salem, who you know, Pack, as a photographer and has covered a lot of ACC events, he made that picture of my dad and Coach K. That was my dad's last ACC tournament. That was my dad's last. That was 2011. Duke had beaten Carolina in the championship game after Carolina won the week before in Chapel Hill. Those memories are things that you think about. When you start thinking about Duke Carolina, it's interesting. I had a conversation with some people tied to both schools this week about us being a part of that Saturday night. And it was about memories of moments that had little or nothing to do with the games. It was just the interaction and the history of the rivalry, right? And for me, Coach K and his respect level for my dad and the way they kind of interacted with one another, it was always fascinating. And I'm grateful for that relationship and grateful for when my dad retired, he called my dad and talked to him for 20 or 30 minutes on the phone one day. And that was unbelievable. And then when my dad passed away, he and Mickey were just incredible to my mom. And I'm always going to be grateful for that. The humanity of the man. And I will say this, some of you around the ACC footprint, Andrew Carter of the News Observer in Raleigh today has written a story about the relationship between Mike Krzyzewski and Dean Smith, and it is phenomenal. It's not good. It's phenomenal, including a summer of 2014 meeting at Figure Eight Island where it just so happened Dean and Linnea Smith were staying a few houses down from where Mike and Mickey Krzyzewski were. And they found a way to the two coaches visit on the porch of a beach house at Figure Eight Island months before Dean Smith passed away. So, and then there's this moment at the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame with the Naismith Dinner years ago where you see a picture of the two sitting together. And Coach K knows where Coach Smith is, but the warmth between the two. And you know this because we grew up in a time where this thing got stoked now. That 89 championship game we were talking about the other day, that's where this thing was flammable, right? But it's a great, great correlation. And now with Mike retiring at the end of the year, It's incredible storytelling that's going on, and it's a real credit to our industry, people who cover the games and talk about the games, for some of the stuff that's going on.
You know, the one thing that I think folks may not get is the fans really do despise one another. I mean, the North Carolina fans and Duke fans, it's just, it doesn't work. It's oil and water. But there's always been a respect factor amongst the coaches and the players, right?
Yeah.
That, hey, we're here to battle. We're here to win.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always been a respect factor there, right? Always. And it's always been interesting to me because I didn't grow up as a North Carolina fan or a Duke fan. I was an NC State guy, right, as a kid.
You're mad at both of them.
I didn't like either one of them. So, and I always thought Billy had it out for my team, right? He loved Duke. He loved Carolina.
Billy hated Carolina.
No.
Haven't you?
That's a whole separate 30 for 30. John Dahl, you want to do one? You want to do one to get people talking?
You think that Leitner thing was good, Dahl? We got one for you.
We got one for you.
Yeah, come over here, Dahl. We'll show you one.
Right. But the thing that you got to know, at least in the
world,
because we're so blessed where we were, was there was always a respect factor amongst players and coaches, right?
Yep.
I mean, they get it. Hey, we're under this microscope, and there's pressure to win, and the excellence that these programs have had were so good for so long. That you don't do it without really great players and great coaches and all that stuff. But the fans, I mean, that's a whole separate animal. But people just assume, well, nobody likes anybody. Well, that's not necessarily the case at all.
No.
And your story about Coach K and, you know, the respect factor for the rivalry. I mean, hey, you know what made Duke better? North Carolina being really good. You know what made North Carolina good?
Yep.
Duke being really good. And, you know, we got into stuff like Coach K doing those American Express commercials. Man, North Carolina, oh, this is the biggest, ridiculous, the worst commercials I've ever seen. It's the biggest recruiting advantage. I mean, so people just took crazy stuff and positions.
Right.
But there was always a respect factor that, hey, you know what? They're doing it right. We're doing it right. We got great players. They got great players. Mm-hmm. We're 8 miles apart. Let's go play. And that's why the series is the best in college basketball and arguably one of the greatest rivalries in all of the sports of whatever you want to come up with.
Yep. They make each other better.
No question about it. And you know what? And when there were hiccups for both programs, and there weren't many over a span of 4 or 5 decades, you know, when North Carolina went through the transition that Dean's done and the Doherty thing was a little shaky and, you know, Roy hadn't gotten the things. You know, when Duke was winning those games by 30, it didn't feel right.
Right.
Even this past year, I got to be honest with you.
The January game.
Yeah,
the one we had earlier in February.
You're so programmed as a college basketball fan. Forget the ACC. As a college basketball fan, you're so programmed to watch Duke North Carolina play epic games where it's last possession, whether the Smith Center is going nuts, the Cameron Crazies are going bonkers.
Right.
And, man, did you see the game? That when you get one of those 31-8s, it's like, it just doesn't feel right, right? I mean, that's really the exception to the rule. It's a testament to really to not only what Kay's built, but what, you know, Dean and Roy and everybody at North Carolina. I mean, too, we've been, like I said, we're spoiled rotten that those two programs have been so good for so long. You just assume, well, they just roll the ball out and they win 30 games into the Final Four.
It's remarkable for Kay in the retirement this weekend, but it's also remarkable that it's Duke Carolina with it.
That's right.
That's the beauty.
That's the way it should be.
Right. Speaking of success that Duke has had, there is a run of 5 straight ACC tournament titles and 7 in 8 years for the Blue Devils. That is a big part of Monday night's last 2 episodes of the tournament documentary here on ACC Network, including the trials and tribulations of one of the greatest shooters in college basketball history, J.J. Redick.
Got to play up on the three-point shooters.
Gilchrist's three-point play tied the game. Duke would now have the chance to win it on the final shot. And just about everyone on the Maryland side and the Duke side knew that the ball would end up in the hands of the Blue Devils' sophomore star, J.J. Redick. In overtime, Duke would never recover. Maryland had finally defeated them with everything on the line.
I remember Gary saying, we finally did it. We finally did it. And he was talking about winning the ACC tournament. But it was also about beating Duke in a big game. And I remember Gary being as happy after that game as I've ever seen him, including the night they won the national championship.
But in every ACC tournament story, there's always a flip side. For J.J. Redick, it was like the end of a charmed life. The young star who could do no wrong was suddenly the guy who couldn't come through when it mattered most.
What I remember about that tournament and the end of that, my sophomore year, but that tournament especially was, tasting failure. When I started at Duke, I wanted to sort of uphold the legacy of so many Duke players and sort of etch my name as one of the greatest Duke players ever. And that's really all that mattered to me. And failing in the last moment of the game and not winning that tournament was actually devastating to me.
And the Maryland fans never let him forget it.
Maryland fans getting my cell phone number. I changed my cell phone number like 12 times my sophomore year, and Maryland fans are calling me at 3 a.m, telling me I'm the Antichrist. And, you know, it was difficult. I always tell people, man, I have zero problems with any college fan base, except for Maryland, those guys.
For Redick, there was only one way to exercise his demons, and that was in the ACC Tournament Championship game, where Duke played Georgia Tech the next year.
Redick way outside. Are you serious?
Redick poured in 26 points to win Duke back the tournament championship.
JJ, man, he can lace him up and play on my team, I can tell you that.
And he was named the Everett Case Tournament MVP.
I was doing an interview, and all of a sudden Coach K comes over and gives me a hug, and I just started crying, and I buried my head in his shoulder. He had been front and center with my struggles my sophomore year, and he had really essentially given me another chance. That moment is one of the best moments of my life, for sure.
Tournament documentary, last two episodes, 9 and 10, Monday night, 9 o'clock on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app.
What did he say about Maryland fans?
Yeah, so we are. That's where we are.
That doc, it's going to be sad that thing ends Monday night, man. I'm telling you, it has been so
crestfallen, good. Are you?
I mean, it's been really...
Crestfallen.
It's kind of like Friday Night Duels on ACC Network. You kind of know Friday nights, I know I was going to watch.
Yeah.
Monday nights on ACC Network, you know exactly where you're going, man.
Yeah.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday. I'm sorry. Is this thing on?
Yeah, are we working?
Yeah, we working.
Can we go to Tallahassee, talk to people winning?
Yes, let's do that before we get in trouble.
Lonnie Alameda, of course, is the terrific head softball coach at Florida State. And you guys are rolling. Congratulations. 17 in the empty set.
Thank you. Been a lot of fun. How are you guys doing?
We're great. Can you get a better start? I mean... Let's talk about what surprised you so far in this start. Anything surprise you?
Not too much. I don't know. Obviously, being undefeated, we've played a pretty tough schedule.
Yeah.
So, you know, the undefeated part is pretty awesome. But, you know, sometimes this time of year, it's more about the process piece. So you don't even really look at the wins and losses. You just look how you're playing. And there's been so many freshman moments. Kaylee Harding, you know, as a sophomore getting after it. I think Danielle Watson, we all know Kat Sandercock can do. So... just been really impressed. Josie Muffley coming in doing some things. Def Flaherty's gotten better. It's just so fun to see the girls grow. And honestly, I think the biggest thing right now is just we're playing like a team. And sometimes that takes a long time to earn. But we've played some tough games, and different people at different times have stepped up. And it's been pretty awesome and special to be around.
Coach, you know, chemistry is always a funny thing, isn't it? I mean, every team is different, regardless if you got a lot of folks back from a year ago or it's a whole new team. But chemistry is always kind of one of those secret sauce things. You've had so many great teams at Florida State. Do you feel, even after just 17 games, that there is a chemistry about this group that reminds you of some of the great teams in the past? Or is this a totally different group?
Yeah, I totally different group. I think the big thing about chemistry is when they're comfortable enough to be themselves, they grow this identity and this special feel. So, you know, we have our barriers. It's kind of like a coaching staff, you know, creates the barriers and the bridge so we don't fall off, right? So we got the core values and the standards, and we make sure that they can go, but they're the ones that are cruising across the bridge. They're the ones that are getting it done. And so I'm just really proud of them for being comfortable enough to show up and be who they are on the field, and it's creating a pretty special team. And I'll also say, too, I think we learned so much last year, and it's an incredible run. We had some highs and lows during the season, but all those returners, they know what the length of a season's about, and they know how special it is to really know your teammates and get after your teammates. It's going to be someone different all the time. And so I think the lessons from last year and definitely the comfortableness to be who you are and just play some softball.
All right. I want to go to the fact that I was looking at your stats and kind of looking at the schedule, and I know you open ACC play this weekend with Pittsburgh. Sidney Sherrill has played a lot of softball for you. Not some softball, a lot of softball. How much do you lean on Sidney in a year where you had the lessons from a year ago and yet you're trying to incorporate new names, new faces, new concepts, new personalities to your team and obviously the strength you guys have built there?
Yeah, I mean, we lean on returners a ton and we lean on Sid a ton. She's got such a knack for understanding the game of softball. I mean, she's just really a softball player. And so, you know, we lean on her experience, but also her guidance. You know, I mean, she's very passionate about the game. She wants to be the best she can. And something fun about Sid is she's wanting to be a softball coach. So she's in our offices. She has a little 10 to 12 slot in the mornings that comes in our offices. And, you know, learning what coaching life's all about. And it's so cool because she is doing a lot of those things on the field already. And now when she gets into her next level, she knows, you know, what behind the scenes part is. But we have some really cool conversations with her in the office. And she's so mature and just a unique individual. Just so awesome. And it just brings that specialness to the field. Sometimes we're connecting office in the field with players and coaches. And it's been really awesome.
Speaking of coaches, Travis Wilson, number 500. Pretty big deal, huh?
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes a head coach, you know, gets all the headlines, and we all know that assistant coaches and staff, I mean, we wouldn't have successful programs without amazing people. And Travis has been there with me for quite a while, and we've gone through some highs and lows, and we've seen this journey together. And so the girls wanted to douse him with some water and some, you know, give him that feel of a celebratory moment, but he's just as passionate and so amazingly smart in the game, and has just really helped this program grow. And so that was really fun for the girls to be able to do that. And you know, I mean, sometimes we just don't get the accolades as assistant coaches, but he is just as much as a head coach as I am, and we share so many amazing duties.
That's awesome. All right, you start conference play. We know kind of how interesting last spring was, just the landscape of trying to play these games and all that type thing.
Yep.
What do you sense this spring will be like, Lonnie?
You know, honestly, we have midweeks now, so it's a little bit different. We played, you know, Tuesday and last night, and, you know, it's the grind part. And, you know, I always think of like a single A, double A ball, you know, when you're on the bus and you're just grinding it out. And that's the love of the game. That's the love of our baseball, softball sport. So that's added a little bit. But as we jump into ACC play, I'm so proud of our conference. You know, we just gotten so much better. And you look at what Vautech and Clemson and, you know, Duke's doing. And, you know, you see like Notre Dame going out and playing the schedule they're playing. I mean, we're excited to play Pitt this weekend. They swing the bats. They were a little injured last year. You know, their coaching staff does a great job. And we're just excited to play them. And, of course, they're going to be hosting the ACC tournament. So, you know, it's nice to step out and see some teams that you know they're going to be in the tournament too. And I'm just really proud of the conference. Very competitive, powerful conference. And it's on the rise. But we know in the ACC we've been on the rise for a long time. But it's definitely we're being talked about now. And I just think that's just a really cool mark for us and for every team and every program that's in the conference.
What are the pros and cons of midweeks? Because I know people are going to hear that and they'll think, well, in college baseball, they've been doing it for years. But softball, it's kind of a new wrinkle. What do you think the positives and are there any downsides to this?
Yeah, I don't know yet. We're still going down the line with pitching. I think pitching's probably one of those big things. You know, on baseball, you have guys limited by innings they can throw. You have your Friday night, your Saturday starter, your Sunday. You know, midweeks you kind of throw in some random people. Well, we only have 2 to 3 on staff, you know. We have 5, we're lucky enough. 6, you know, we're lucky enough. But you look in softball, you know, you don't want to be throwing, you know, Cat on midweek. So you're trying to develop some pitching. But softball's never been one of the sports that's been okay dropping some midweek games, where baseball, that's kind of known that you're not throwing your ace all the time. But, you know, I do think pitchers, as much as we think they can throw enough, the hitters have gotten better in this game. And if you want a healthy Kat Sandercock, if you want a Valerie Cagle, if you want those people throwing in the World Series, you've got to limit their action during the year. And so I think it's development of other pitchers. I think it's development of other players. But, you know, it's also making sure that you don't drop a game, because you want to make sure your RPI is up there. You want to make sure that you got a chance to host a regional and be one of the national seeds. So it's that balance for us that's been there for a while. But I think the more we get talked about, the more people get see softball, you realize that you're putting this body of work together, and it takes a whole team and development, not only for your postseason runs, but for the future of your program.
Coach, I want to go back to something you said regarding chemistry, because I thought it was intriguing where you were going, where, hey, the wins and the losses aren't as important now as opposed to everybody just getting comfortable with themselves. You know, we're still in this pandemic, even though it feels like we're coming closer to the end of it. And for student athletes, especially the last 2 years, they've been under such unbelievable strain from an academic standpoint, because they're not going to regular class. A lot of it's been Zoom, virtual. Obviously, sports has been affected big time, even though it seems like we're kind of getting closer and closer back to normal. From a mental health standpoint, which I know has been discussed a bunch, where are we now, big picture, as we enter springtime? Because it feels going to be 80 degrees here, starting to feel good about getting outside, doing things again. But from a mental health standpoint, where are we with student-athletes, big picture?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big loaded question, and I would love to get in a room with a lot of coaches and their experience they're having. And I think for a lot of us coaches too, we're living it right now, so we don't know exactly where we're at, but we do know that, you know, the kids have experienced a lot of different layers. You have some kids in college right now that didn't really have a high school season, or had a unique different experience in high school where they didn't have, maybe have proms or didn't have celebratory times. You're having a freshman class that went through no on-campus classes, or didn't even hang out with their teammates, you know, so they were in their dorms or bubbles or whatever it was, and didn't hang out with their teammates. You have a season where you played maybe a conference season only, or no midweeks, and so you probably have one class that's experienced 56 games every single day, you know, going through it. And so I think the biggest thing for us coaches right now, and even teams getting together, is just really having good conversations, face-to-face conversations. I don't think mental health has a stigma much anymore. Everyone knows that it's very important to get to know people and love up people, and then watch them do their thing on the court, the field, the wherever they're at, you know, getting after their sport. So, but the relationship is so huge. But I do think as a coach, sometimes we just got to acknowledge, you know, some kids don't know what it's like to play Tuesday, Wednesday, practice a little on Thursday, get after 3-game series, and keep pushing through some things that may be tough. But on the other side, we've got to realize that, you know, they haven't endured a lot of the highs and lows that sport brings you. So as coaches, you got to understand that. So we just got to keep that relationship piece going and have a lot of good conversations.
I'm not sure we have visited with you since you went to the Olympics. I am curious what you learned from that experience, not only about the game perhaps, but just about conducting an event like that in the environment that it was staged.
Yeah. Wow. The Olympics, it was incredible. I was able to be a part of Beijing Olympics and, you know, all the fans and all the fun, you know, and then you go to Tokyo and you're really limited to testing every day. Right. You walk from your bus to your dorm. You can't be around a whole lot. But high achieving athletes, high achieving people, they find a way, you know, they find a way. You could look down, you know, we were probably 5-6 stories up, and you could look down on the grass areas, and you know, you'd have some boxers, taekwondo, you'd have some people out running. You had some people playing catch, whether it was baseball, like everyone found their spot to get themselves prepared for what they needed to do. And so, you know, I think that, everyone, you know, makes adjustments. You make adjustments and you figure it out. And that's being around that type of environment. It's absolutely incredible to see, The highest level of whatever it was, I don't care if it's table tennis, I don't care what it is, you're going to find a way to get the edge and you're going to make that happen. And then also all the athletes that celebrate each other. There was so much respect in that, in the Olympic Village. I mean, everyone's just achieving such a high level of commitment on top of athleticism. So people put on hold their life for 4 years, if not 10, if not however long, as they're trying to achieve something, whether you're medaling or you're representing your country. And so the level of respect, just walking into the chow room, right, the lunch hall, like the amount of athletes that are in there and the different kinds of foods they eat and things that they're doing and preparing for what they do, it's just it was very inspiring, and I'm just so lucky to be a part of it. But from the outside, I think people see that, you know, Tokyo, it's sad that people couldn't be there. The kids found a way. They Zoomed with families at home. They Zoomed with their towns at home. I mean, people found a way to connect with them. And, you know, you felt the specialness of being an Olympian there. It was really, really awesome.
Sounds like a fabulous experience. And even as a fan, everybody should go to an Olympics. I'm just telling you, it's truly a melting pot in every sense of the word. All right, before we let you go, we've been asking coaches this question, and this is for you specifically, not a team, not another coach. This is for you, Lonnie. What is your walk-up music? What's the tune that gets your day moving, one way or the other?
I'm a big music junkie. Anything from Prince, Fleetwood Mac. I don't know. Those would probably be the two off the top of my head, but I do love some Prince. He was pretty amazing back in his day, and get your toe tapping, that's for sure.
I think that's the first Prince reference by any coach so far. First time.
Yeah, but Lonnie's she's in our neighborhood. She knows. She lives in that neighborhood we're in. Yeah, right?
That is true. That is true. Yep, got some 80s.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. Great to see you. Congratulations on the start. Looking forward to watching you guys as you start ACC play. Be well. Always appreciate it.
Thank you. Hope you get out those links. Get after it today.
Yeah,
take care.
Yeah, not today, but you're very kind to wish us well when we do. Lonnie Alameda,
she's a great coach.
This league passed good a long time ago.
Let me tell you something. This league is so fortunate to have her because she has set the standard by which Clemson starts a program. Duke wins an ACC title. Virginia Tech's on fire. Notre Dame schedules accordingly. I mean, Florida State has set the bar by which, hey, you want to go copy your program? Look at Florida State. Yeah. She's a great coach.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday. The clip you're about ready to hear, strong. We talked about Wright Thompson yesterday.
I'm just telling you, the guy is phenomenal. And from time to time, he puts his own voice to the words he writes. And Coach Krzyzewski, of course, the retirement and the last run, but as Wright Thompson chronicles, really in many ways, Mike Krzyzewski's just trying to complete the full circle.
For Duke to make it to this year's Final Four, and this, Mike Krzyzewski's final season, the road may take them to where it all first started. Coach K grew up 1.7 miles straight north on Damon from the United Center, on Cortez Street, in an insular neighborhood of Polish immigrants, known by the nearest church, St. Helens, where he went as a boy.
I lived in a great neighborhood. People have said it was like a village. Kids went out. We stayed out all the time. Our parents didn't necessarily know where we were at. They just knew we were in the village. And it was a great place to grow up and build relationships.
His best friends on those close blocks remain his best friends, even seven decades on. His father didn't say much. Mike didn't know him that well. The silent worker bee who dreamed of a future he could never quite make come true.
I didn't get a chance for interaction with my dad. I'd always heard, your dad's proud of you, but my dad never came up to me and says, you know, son, I'm proud of you. That's the way it was.
William Krzyzewski changed his last name to Cross in public so he'd have better luck getting jobs. And as a child, Mike navigated the family politics between aunts and uncles who went by the old spelling and those who fully invested themselves in the new.
People from Eastern Europe were looked down upon. So if you had an SKI or a WICZ ending it to your name, you would be kind of looked upon as a second-class citizen.
Mike's dad died during his senior year at West Point, and his tombstone said Cross. Years later, after his mom passed, Mike and his brother had that tombstone thrown away and replaced with one that said Krzyzewski.
We were closer to my mom than we were to my dad because we seen my mom more, and she was always there.
She was always on my side. She gave me unconditional support, unfailing love. As a result of my relationship with her, I was never afraid to lose.
Mike's mother, Emily Krzyzewski, shaped her son's view of the world. A tough, funny woman who cleaned office buildings at night, she gave incredible wisdom to her son, far beyond what you'd think possible of an eighth grade education. Every Duke team knows the story of the muggers who tried and failed to snatch her purse.
She got off the CTA bus in Chicago, and some kids knocked her over, and they grabbed at her purse, and she didn't let it go. And finally, they left. And afterwards, my brother and I, you know, they could have beaten up. I said, Mike, it's my purse. Didn't belong to them.
When he'd go to Chicago to recruit, instead of staying at some fancy hotel, he'd crash with his mom in her small three-room flat. He tried to send her money, but she'd simply send it back to all her grandchildren as a Christmas gift. She was and remains his better angel. And when she died, Mike found a steno pad where she'd written down the result of every game he'd ever coached.
Duke has won its first national championship. College basketball has a repeat champion.
Sometimes, during incredibly tense games, when the noise came down to the bench like boulders, his assistants would hear him whisper the name Emily, and they know he was praying to his mother.
He drives it, the whistle, makes it out of the buzzer!
Are you sure?
He hit it!
Are you serious?
I'm gonna miss it. Being in Cameron for those big games, how lucky can you be?
Michael William Krzyzewski is coaching his last home game at Duke this week. And soon he will retire as the winningest coach in the history of his sport.
Nobody has ever won more games in Division I men's basketball than Mike Krzyzewski.
He has been a leader and father figure to generations of young men, from Johnny Dawkins to Hurley, Leitner, and Grant, Quinn Snyder, Jay Billis, Zion Williamson, Tyus Jones. But he also remains the son of Bill and Emily from Cortez Street in the St. Helen Parish of Chicago. He carries a rosary in each pocket for every game. One was given to him by his favorite priest back home. The other belonged to his mother. The past is everywhere around him now in these last weeks of his career. Not long ago, all the potential top seeds got asked by the NCAA for their preferred route to the Final Four. Duke asked to go through Chicago. For Coach K, where you're headed is always where you're from.
That's an ESPN cover story with Wright Thompson. Don't forget to read the companion. That's almost the companion piece to the story, by the way. The story is terrific American sports writing, as it should be from one of the preeminent writers in the business in Wright Thompson. So you'll enjoy that at ESPN.com along with the other things. And I think you can tell this week we've tried to capture not only the moment of what is happening, but also chronicle the relationship within the league, especially the one as it relates to Carolina. And I think that's important too.
Yeah, I think Kay likes it too, to be honest with you. I mean, that's like I said to you about half an hour ago, North Carolina's made Duke and Coach K better, and it's been reciprocated.
Yep.
And the league, for that matter.
If the Blue Devils win the national championship, Krzyzewski will end his career the same way John Wooden did 47 years ago. And that's all part of Wright's story as well.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.